Hey, welcome back to Good Growing with the Garden Gal. Notice all the G's in there, Jalene?
Yes.
I like that because my name is George.
Good Growing. Oh, brother. Good Growing Garden Gal and George.
Yeah, I like that. And Jalene, well, but it sounds kind of like a G.
Kind of.
You're kind of you're a close relative.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think that'll work.
Okay.
Hey, and I'm George Corliss, and that's Jalene Fenner. And the Garden Gal is with us today, folks, and her name is Teresa Williams. She's from the Wexford Conservation District, and we've just been kind of setting the tone for this new program. The idea behind the program is to help you to become stewards of your own natural resources. Now, Teresa, when we're talking about natural resources, that's a pretty vast subject. Why don't you maybe share about that? Because you guys have that in your goals and objectives for the conservation district. So natural resources, what are we talking about?
Okay. Well, within the conservation districts now, we call ourselves conservation districts because we do deal with more than soil. We work hand in hand with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and we have a term that we call SWAPA plus H. And SWAPA stands for soils, water, airs, plants, animals, and the H is humans because people are part of this system too.
SWAPA?
SWAPA. Soil, water, air, plants, animals, and humans.
Huh. It's going to take me a little while for that one, but that's great. I mean, yeah. That's what it's all. It's well-rounded, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it covers everything.
Yeah. And we're supposed to be great stewards of the ground, according to the Bible.
That's
it's great
right.
Stewards of anything. So, but, you know, one thing that we didn't really talk about, we talked about your love, and people can actually see that. I see it kind of just coming out of her skin, Jalene. I don't know about you, but that's the 9-to-5 job. What do you do after that?
Well, my husband and I, we own 40 acres, and most of that is woodland, but we have an acre that we grow intensively on. And it's every vegetable A to Z that I think I can pull off here. We have herbs. We have chickens. We also have fruit tree orchards and small fruits.
On the 1 acre?
The orchard goes beyond the 1 acre, and where the chickens go goes beyond the 1 acre.
So in some ways, you're dealing with these, you know, great big maybe conglomerates of 1,000-acre farmers and dairy farmers and all these other things. But on the other hand, you're just like us.
Gardening.
You got your own garden in the backyard.
It's scalable.
A little bigger.
Well, I was going to say a little bigger because most people don't have 1 acre garden.
Yeah, that's true. Well, David does.
A 1 acre garden?
David and Bethany.
Wow.
Yeah, they do too. So you got company right here in the back with the boss, yeah, as you go through here. But today we're talking about soil. And why don't you start out with the components of healthy soil?
Sure. When we think of soil, I want to first start with what it isn't. It's not dirt. Dirt is what you get under your fingernails. Soil is this wonderful system that contains mineral particles of all different sizes, and just as important as those mineral particles are the spaces between those mineral particles. We call those pore spaces. And in a healthy soil...
Wait a minute, you're saying pore.
Pore, yes. P-O-R. Just like pores in your skin.
Okay, yeah. Not P-O-R-E.
Yes, P-O-R-E.
Say that again. You just said.
Just as important as the mineral particles in your soil are the spaces between those particles.
Which are called
pores. Which are called pores. Yes.
Why is that important?
Because roots... For plants, they need those spaces, and they need half of that space to be filled with air and half of that space to be filled with water, because roots respire and roots take up water. And if there was no pore space, they couldn't get air, they couldn't get water.
So roots have to get air?
Yes, they do.
Oh, come on.
I'm serious.
Did you know that?
No, so that's what I'm just like. So soil, you know, people call soil dirt, but it's... Not just dirt.
No, it's
soil has space in it.
Yes, and it has all kinds of mineral particles, from the very, very tiny clay particles that help us hold water and they help retain nutrients, to our larger sand particles, which help with creating those pore spaces.
Okay.
Think about a waterlogged plant and how bad a waterlogged plant looks like. And that's a good illustration of why we need pore spaces that have air in it.
Yeah, it's got too much water.
It's got too much water.
Yeah.
So what creates those pore spaces then?
Our the size of the particles themselves are helpful. But also, we have a lot of things that live in the soil. We have earthworms. We have different insects. We have good bacteria, good fungi, other invertebrates that live in the soil. And those help to create pore spaces as well.
So, you know, you think about this. I'm getting kind of excited about this. It's like if you have an ant farm, you know, you see the dirt. And then you see them working. Well, so if you have soil, there's all kinds of things. And if you look at a slice of soil, there's all kinds of things in that soil, right?
Yes, there are. In a healthy soil, think about healthy that. Soil a slice is very of oil.
You know, we just look at the top. But if you took, you know, a slice like 6 inches from top to bottom and was able to look at it sideways.
And so I live in McBain. And I'm telling you, when we first started our garden, all we had was nothing but clay. And mm-hmm. So there's no soil pores in that, I don't think. Am I wrong?
Well, they're probably greatly diminished. If
clay.
If it's clay in its natural state that hasn't been plowed, there's going to be some pore space in there. Not as much as a sand, but there's going to be something. If we plow the soil too much, we can basically ruin those air channels, those pore spaces. It's all about how much.
Well, see, yeah, that's, I know, because where I live in Boone, it's sandy soil. So
it's the exact opposite of the clay, right?
Yeah. But see, if it's drought, you're saying that's, you don't have the water. But see, clay can have more water.
But you know, there's a panacea that works for both.
And what?
A magic compound.
Okay, I like that better. A panacea?
Let's go with magic compounds. More fun. Organic matter. Organic matter can help hold water in clay. I'm sorry, in sand. And organic matter can help with increasing spaces between the particles in a clay. So whether you have sand or whether you have clay, organic matter is going to help you out.
Now, what about like a silty soil? What is that?
Silt, the technical definition of a silt has to do with the size of the particle. And silt's actually kind of rare in our area. It's bigger than a clay, but if you were to feel it, if you were to have a little bit of silt in the palm of your hand and maybe have a drop of water with it and feel it, it's incredibly smooth. It's a bigger particle than a clay, but not a whole lot bigger.
So that's why it's called kind of silt. It's kind of like silky.
Silt and silk. There's,
but it's soft.
We have terms in soil that there can be. A loam is a soil that has a mixture of sand, silt, and clay in it. And we can say it can be a clay loam or a silt loam or a sandy loam, depending on which of those textures is predominant. But a loam is ideal because a loam has all of those different textures in it.
Now, when you go south on, like, especially like US 27, you see these farms that the dirt is just as black can be. I'm sure it was that way normally, but obviously they want to keep it that way. What is that, and how do they keep it that way?
If you're thinking maybe about the mint farms near St. John's, is that what you're thinking of? Those are what we call muck soils, and they are very deep organic matter soils. So they've got feet thick layers of organic matter, and that's what the black is that you're seeing.
Now, I have a friend of mine, and he lives in the Cedar Lake area, and he's had a couple of his other friends do this, and he had read himself about wood chips. Mm-hmm. And what he had done, he does not rototill or do anything anymore to his garden. He rototilled it, and then he put down either paper or boxes. And this was in the fall after the season was done. And then he put about 5 or 6 inches of wood chips on that. And then in the springtime, obviously everything had settled down now. And he put about 5 more inches of wood chips all the way across the garden. And by the time he planted, obviously there's nothing growing. There's no weeds growing. There's nothing growing. And so he pushed back the wood chips and planted like his tomato plants and then put the wood chips around the tomato plants. And then when he grew his carrots, he did the same thing. He made just a long row. And then when the carrots grew, he pushed the wood chips around there. He didn't have to water. He never rototilled. he hardly ever even had a weed in the entire garden.
That'd be nice.
But those wood chips, all they kept doing was decaying. And I mean, he started out with 3 or 4 inches of topsoil. Now he's got like 6 or 8 inches of just the blackest topsoil you can imagine. And so that's what you're talking about. Those organic matters like that help to build those things up?
Yeah, but I want to give a couple of details that are particularly important if you're going to be using newspaper or cardboard or wood chips. All of those are very high in carbon, which is an important part of organic matter. The key with using any of these high carbon things like straw or wood chips or cardboard is to keep them on top and not to till them in.
Right.
If you were to till them in, what happens is they'll capture all the free nitrogen in the soil and rob your growing plants of that nitrogen. So as long as you keep it on top, that's a good system. But please don't till those in, because you'll end up with a nitrogen deficiency for your plants.
That was one of the best things that he said. He has not had to rototill. There's no weeds. He might have had one or two weeds, and he has a big garden. Mm-hmm. And the plants are tremendously big. Great big huge things, and it was just amazing to me.
And another thing that's probably happening when you do that, where you put things like wood chips on the surface and you don't till, fungi are beneficial fungi in the soil. They're able to scavenge and essentially harvest nutrients, free nutrients in the soil, and they take a growth of theirs called a hypha, and they penetrate the plant roots and then directly funnel those nutrients from the soil into the plant root. And the plants, in exchange, produce sugars from their roots. And those sugars feed the fungi. So it's this wonderfully mutually beneficial relationship where the plants providing sugars to the soil fungi, and the soil fungi are harvesting nutrients to give to the plant.
Isn't that amazing?
So they could be diabetics too if they don't get the sugar. is that right? Or too much sugar?
You're out of my territory, yeah, George.
But I'm just thinking, God did this. That's what I'm thinking about. You know, the plant, the root, the fungi, the sugars. That's just amazing. And I just want to make sure about the wood chips. They're not treated wood chips, are they?
They shouldn't be, because if they're treated, treatment usually involves a fungicide, something that would kill a fungi, and we don't want that in the garden. We want the good fungi to thrive.
That's what I thought, because some people might get treated wood chips for a decorative garden, maybe, if they didn't care about the fungi.
If you're growing plants, and they're really best to stay away from a treated wood product.
If you just tuned in, I'm George Corliss, and Jelaine Fenner is with me, and you're listening to Strong Tower Radio. And our program today is Good Growing with a Garden Gal, and we've got Teresa Williams with us, the Garden Gal herself from the Wexford Conservation District. Just an FYI for everybody, if the wood chip thing, study on that. There's books out there, and Teresa, I'm sure you're going to tell us a lot of other things that you can do too besides wood chips. And I hate weeds. I mean, if you can come up with anything that you don't have to weed, I'm all for that. And the only thing that I don't mind weeds is when I have young kids that I can boss around still. And I don't have that anymore. Right. And so, right, Jelaine?
Yeah.
We have, that's
have
gone.
The kids, yeah.
So if the weeds come up, guess who's weeding now?
Yeah. But, well, and people probably can call any conservation district to get the information, some information they might want regarding wood chips, weeding, you know, things like
or
that.
Or the extension agency. You guys work hand in hand.
Right. There's every county should be serviced by both a conservation district and by a cooperative extension service from their land grant university. In Michigan, it's Michigan State.
It was amazing to me here in Cadillac. You know, they have storms like we just had one go through, and sometimes the city has their workers out there and they're cutting those branches, you know, that are, or a tree that's burned down or blown down, not burned down. But they put that through a chipper, and it goes right into the truck. Well, there is a huge place way out of everybody's sight. I keep hitting my microphone here, but way out of everybody's sight that has mountains of those wood chips for the last 5-10 years that they put up there, along with leaves and other things. And it's the almost some of them are just like pure black dirt. I'm shocked that people don't go up there and just, you know, bring a tractor or their truck and just shovel all that they want in there. The city doesn't want it. They just put it there. And I'm like, I'm sure other cities probably do the same thing. And so they're, you know, ask your city or ask your county what they do with the leaves and the leaves and the refuge and the wood chips and those other things like that. Cause all they're doing is dumping them someplace and making a pile. And so, you know, it's more than worth checking that out as you go through there. But, you know, we're talking about soil today and how important that is. Teresa, here you're the star of the program and I'm blathering on. How long does it take to build up soil? So, I mean, I've got clay soil and I've got clay soil. So, you know, what am I going to do? And how long is it going to take to build that up? I mean, can I plant a garden right away or is it even worth planting a garden?
Well, tell me a few more details, George, before I can give you an answer that's
very, very wet clay soil is where we're at over there. And if you go 100 yards to the other way, it's sand.
Okay.
And so we have just nothing but clay with a very small amount of topsoil on top of that has all the different kinds of grasses that, you know, crabgrass and other things like that that's on there. That's what we started with. And so what would you suggest?
If you're gardening in a clay soil, a really good option is to go with a raised bed garden. And that is where you're not tilling the soil and putting things deeper. You're trying to grow up. And if you you can put sides on it with wood, or you can just basically make a mound with slightly sloping sides, but go up rather than down if you've got clay soil. Add some organic matter to the top and keep building up. And once you start adding organic matter, you should start getting worms in there to help make some drainage channels. And again, if you can not till that, let those worm drainage channels be. Till it once if you need to get it into shape. But then keep adding organic matter. Mulch is fantastic. We have part of our farm where we grow both alfalfa and clover, and we grow those for mulch, specifically for mulch. And we put those on top of the soil, and that way it controls your weeds. You mentioned you don't have your kid weeding crew anymore. It'll control your weeds. It'll build organic matter. It'll create great habitat for earthworms, and all those things should help improve the drainage of your soil and keep down your weeds.
Well, isn't that what farmers like, you know, after they've harvested, they'll put in a cover crop, they call it, which
yes.
is usually maybe rye or maybe some wheat or something. But it's a cover crop to keep the soil. And then when it's time to spring, in the spring, then they...
Depends on, there's lots of different things. You're right, cover crops are a great option. And they can do things like protect the soil from erosion. They can build up the organic matter of the soil. If it's a particular type of cover crop, which we call a legume, they can even increase the nitrogen content of the soil and help provide the next crop with some nitrogen.
So can right. the backyard gardener do that same thing?
Absolutely. And here in Cadillac, where we are, there are businesses that provide small packages of cover crop seed, and they're always available mail order. And I think most communities that have any kind of farm store, you should be able to get cover crop seed.
Yeah, there's so many of those and co-ops and other things mm-hmm. like that you can get stuff. Well, all right, this brings us to the end of our second segment of Good Growing with the Garden Gal. And we want you to stay tuned, and we'll be right back with our third segment. We're talking about soils today, and in our third segment, we're going to talk about the pH level of your soil. Do you do that with a thermometer? How do you do that? And, you know, some other things, nitrogen and some of these other things. So you want to stay tuned. We'll be right back.